We now have a new challenge, perhaps the most monumental in recorded history. The opportunity to investigate a phenomenon that could change our destiny. A look at ourselves 1,000 years in the future.
We're going to examine and perhaps question some widely held theories of what may have happened to this Earth of ours. We're going to investigate some strange and bizarre events in the present. Unbelievable happenings as fresh as today's headlines. And more important, perhaps, we're going to take a searching and scientific look into the future. We're reaching more and more out into space. Perhaps as we may learn, someone, something, somewhere in space is reaching after us.
Who the visitors are, where they're from, and what they want is unknown.
Bigfoot was attracting national attention and was now rapidly becoming the most intriguing mystery on the North American continent. Scientists and photography experts have examined the individual frames of this film and have come to the conclusion that the film and the creature are authentic.
Telepathy, psychokinesis, Bigfoot and black masses, UFOs and Atlantis, Kirlian photography, cloning, and cryonics.
These subjects all have one thing indisputably in common. People want to know more about them.
For mankind's future, on Earth, and beyond.
Welcome to After Dark Radio with your host, Brian Alvarez.
How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on After Dark Radio. It is Sunday night, November 1, 2015, here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. Here live for 2 hours here tonight. We've got a very fun show for everybody. In about a half hour, we're going to be joined by one of my favorite guests, Nicholas De Leon, is going to be on the show today. He is our tech guy. Writes for Vice, does the technology column over there. All sorts of great stuff up. Nicholas De Leon's been on the show many times, and we'll be talking all sorts of different topics with him this evening. It's going to be a fun time. Always enjoy talking tech with Nicholas De Leon. Big fan of all of that myself, and so it's going to be a very good time tonight. He's always a very popular guest here on the show. So Nicholas De Leon is going to be joining us later on here in the program. It is After Dark Radio. We are live every Sunday night, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, if you are listening on a replay. Now you know when you can listen live, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, every Sunday night. And we have a lot of ways for you to get involved with the program. We have phone calls, we have email addresses, we have a text message line, and so much more. I'm going to throw all of that out here in just a moment before I open up the phone lines. And then I will turn the program over to you for the time being. And I'm going to give you some information here. We got some changes to the program. So if you have a pen or paper, or if you've got a cell phone that you want to put these numbers in, couple of changes. So listen carefully. We used to have the whole Skype deal where if you wanted to call, you could either call a local number here in Seattle, or if you do not have free long distance, you could try to Skype us. And we've made some changes here on the show, trying to make it easier for everyone to contact us. I used to have an 800 line here, but I shut it down because there is an 800 line on the normal Monday through Friday wrestling radio show that I do. And so I had been using that. But there were some technical issues on the other end. And so I thought, well, let's just make life easy for everybody. I'll set up another toll-free line here in this studio, and we will use it for both the wrestling show and for After Dark Radio. So no matter where you are in the U.S. and Canada, if you would like to give us a call toll-free, we have a brand new number for you. So grab a pen, grab a paper, grab your cell phone. The toll-free line, brand new, starting this week, is 844-411-5411. That is 844-411-5411. Very easy. 844-411-5411. If you have free long distance, you can also call the regular studio line, which is 425-488-0525. That is 425-488-0525. Both of those numbers come here. The 425 number is a studio line. So if I say studio line, you're on the air. That's you. And if I say toll-free line, you're on the air. That is you if you're calling on the toll-free line. We have no call screener. When you call, it will ring and ring and ring and ring. And if you suddenly hear me doing the show, you'll know you are next in line. Just stand by, turn off your listening device, and get ready to be on the air. If it rings and rings and rings and rings and nobody picks up, well, you just got to try again. But those are the two call-in numbers there, also available at AfterDarkRadioShow.com. And if you would like to send us a text message, do not call this number. Nobody answers, and no one checks the voicemail, if there is a voicemail. I don't even know. It is only for text messages. The phone number is 425-780-7566. That is the text message number, text messages only, 425-780-7566. I will be monitoring Twitter all night long. I'm on Twitter at Brian Alvarez if you want to contact me there. That is at Brian Alvarez on Twitter. You can also follow me. Somebody's going to be lucky number 26,000 very soon. That could be you. Follow me on Twitter. My email address, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. And the Facebook page is facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. If you go to Facebook and just look up After Dark Radio Show, there we are. Like us on Facebook, and you'll also have a chance to contact our Facebook admin, Andrew. If you have guest requests, if you'd like to be on the show, that is the man to talk to. He will forward your information to Kenneth Nita, who is our main producer on the show. And you could be a guest on After Dark Radio, or your favorite paranormal, scientific, whatever radio show guest could be on the program as well. Just send all that information to the Facebook page, facebook.com/afterdarkradioshow. One last thing before we go to the phones. If you head to the website, afterdarkradioshow.com, you can download last week's show with Matt Baglio talking exorcisms. Just in time for Halloween, exorcisms on After Dark Radio. That's the October 25th show. It is available right now as a free download on the website. If you are listening live, if you're not listening live, well, it's gone. And this show is there. If you're listening live, it will be there until this show goes off the air, and then it is gone into the archives at WrestlingObserver.com, only for subscribers. So if you're listening for the first time and you want to hear last week's show, head up there to AfterDarkRadioShow.com, and that program will be there for you to listen to. The lines are open. Anything that is on your mind, anything involving the paranormal, if you've got ghost stories, if you've seen any strange things in the sky, any strange things in the road, anything weird happened to you during your Halloween travels, welcome to call about any of that. I've got a lot of great news stories here to read later on tonight as well. It's going to be a fun time. Let's go to the phones. You are on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
This is Ryan calling from Myersville, PA.
Did you move, or are you just vacationing?
This is my hometown.
Oh, well, what's up?
I had a question about parallel universes. I think I might have been inside a few this year. It's been a while, but three separate times, I believe, it's happened to me.
You've been inside a parallel universe. What does that mean to you, Ryan?
Well, it's like when I visit a place, and I think I'm at the right place, but it's the exact opposite. And it has the same name where I'm supposed to be. It's the same town, but it's the exact opposite of where I should be.
What do you mean it's the exact opposite of where you should be? Give me an example of where you're trying to go and what happens when you think you got there.
Okay, I went to this place once called Three Guys and a Girl, which is a restaurant. Instead of being the family restaurant, which I was supposed to be, I ended up at this bar, which was on the other side of town. It was real wild. So that's one example.
Huh.
Better example was I went to a fishing radio one time, and I went to the wrong fishing radio in the town, and it was for regular people, but I was supposed to be volunteering for the Special Olympics fishing radio, which is on the other side of town.
So you believe that you fell into a parallel universe as opposed to having bad directions?
No one even told me or warned me about any of these possibly happening.
Well, Ryan, listen, before I rudely hang up on you, I have a guy here that says, I'm excited for After Dark. I hope Ryan from Cumberland calls in. This guy texted saying he hoped you called in. He says, we never got closure on the Brian Ladd story. Please bring it up if he calls. Why have you not been talking about Brian Ladd of late? Has something gone on?
I'm going to be actually investigating that in a couple of weeks on the Maybe Get to the Psychic Fair, which is just a couple of miles from Brian Ladd's trailer.
The Psychic Fair.
Yeah, hopefully I can make it, but we'll see.
What is a psychic fair?
I don't have any idea, but I just know that you pay $5 and supposedly there's all these psychics in the building at the same time. I'm hoping Brian Ladd is there.
Okay, now hold on. I got to keep you on the line a little longer. So if you go to the psychic fair, you say there's a whole bunch of psychics all under the same roof, right?
That's correct, but I think at least they'll know who Brian Ladd is, so maybe they'll be able
forget
to...
Forget Brian Ladd. I got more important things to ask you here. So if you pay $5, you can go to the psychic fair, and there will be a whole bunch of psychics all under the same roof, correct?
That's supposedly, but I've never actually been to this thing, so I guess we'll find out in about 2 weeks.
What I would like you to do, Ryan, is I would like you to come up with a question that I want you to go, and I want you to ask every single one of the psychics the same question. For example, you could ask, are you married, Ryan?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Perhaps the question would be, what year will I find the woman of my dreams and get married? And I want you to go ask every single psychic that. Now, if they're all really psychics, they should all give you the same answer, right?
They're probably going to say never because I'm not the relationship type, and they can probably tell by just...
You think they can take one look at you and figure out that you'll never get married? I find that hard to believe, Ryan.
I think it's going to be more based on the conversation.
Huh. Well, the point is, Ryan, find a question that you can ask every single one of them and see if they all give you the same answer. Because if they all give you different answers, that doesn't say much... We're back here on the show, everybody. I have no idea what happened. I fell off into the ether there somehow. But we are back here on the air. Hopefully the connection is still sounding good. I know that twice in the last couple of weeks, my internet has mysteriously gone down. I don't know if that's what happened here or if... I don't know what would happen. I didn't touch anything over there on that computer, so I guess hopefully we'll just cross our fingers and presume that the show goes along just fine for the rest of the evening. Studio line, 425-488-0525, toll free. If you missed it, if I had fallen off into the ether when I mentioned this, somebody in a text message noted that 1111 is in the phone number, 844-411-5411. That is 844-411-5411, and the text message line, 425-780-7566. Let's cross our fingers and hope we have no more connection issues tonight. And away we shall go. This person here on the text message says, have you heard of the supposedly floating city that appeared in China, and what are your thoughts? I have heard the story. I haven't had a chance to really look at it. I don't know anything more about it, but I am putting that on the list of things to check out later on this evening. And if anybody knows anything more about the floating city over China, you're welcome to send me links or anything like that. I do remember seeing that. I presumed it was some sort of CGI deal or something of that nature, or a mirage of some sort. I didn't really look into it, but yes, I have heard that story. Eric here says, I did go for a walk last night during Halloween. I did walk around downtown. Thankfully, I was not mugged, even though I thought I was going to when someone ran by me in white spandex head to toe. Apparently, that was someone's terrible idea for a Halloween costume. One of the big stories that has been talked about a lot, I know Art's been talking about this for quite a while, the alleged alien megastructure that is orbiting star KIC 8462, in case you happen to have a star map next to you and you're out trying to find that one, KIC 8462. Apparently we're going to know a lot more about this very soon, perhaps as early as Thanksgiving. This from motherboard.vice.com, which in fact is exactly, we're going to be talking to Nicholas De Leon today about this. From Vice, not about this particular subject. We'll be talking technology here in about 20 minutes, but this is from the website he works for, motherboard.vice.com. Astronomers are well on their way to finding out whether the bizarre star is the home sun of a technologically advanced alien civilization. The star has been the subject of intense media speculation over the last few weeks due to a recent study entitled Where the Flux, which describes its odd light fluctuations. It seems that every 750 days or so, a huge swarm of objects obscures roughly 20% of KIC 846's light from our perspective. While the authors provide a wide range of natural explanations for the odd dips in the star's luminosity, astronomers involved in the study, as well as outside observers, are not ruling out that the star might be periodically eclipsed by an alien megastructure. For instance, perhaps the star is periodically dimmed by a Dyson sphere crafted from solar panel satellites orbiting the star in tight formation. The chances are pretty high that what this is something completely natural, said Seth Shostak, senior astronomer and director of the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence Institute, in a phone interview with Motherboard. But on the other hand, we can't just blow it off, he continued. If you don't check it out, you can't be sure. In fact, even if you do check it out, you can't be sure. With that said, we can make an educated guess about these structures by taking a closer look at the star. SETI is currently using the Allen Telescope Array, northeast of San Francisco, to hone in on the star's radio emissions between the frequencies of 1 to 10 gigahertz. The goal is to pinpoint any strong signals within an unusually tight band of the radio spectrum, much like the WOW signal, which was received by SETI in 1977 and remains unexplained to this day. And by the way, before we go on any further, if you get an opportunity anytime soon, you should head up to Google and check out the WOW signal. As noted, it is still unexplained to this day. It was a very, very intriguing signal. It got the name due to the fact that the printout itself, the individual that was looking over the printout and saw the strange signal, circled it and wrote WOW next to it because he was so amazed. And it's a very interesting story, so check out the WOW signal, an unexplained signal from 1977 that to this day may have been a signal from an extraterrestrial civilization, but it is gone, and no one has found it since, I guess would be the best way to term it. It says here, if you look at as much of the radio dial as possible, you can see if there's any radio noise at a given spot on the dial. Natural noise is all over the dial, but there's nothing in nature that we know that produces lots of radio noise at a very narrow range of frequencies. The star, I might add, is 1,480 light years away. Shostak says that's 300 times farther than the nearest stars. Any signals are 100,000 times weaker, which is a big factor. So it's a long way away, and that also means that whatever it is that is circling that star, because of the amount of time that it takes the light from that star to reach us here on Earth, that civilization may very well be long gone by now. It says here, a Dyson swarm that can intercept 20% of the light from your star, it's a trillion times more energy than you would need for a transmitter, and maybe the energy is pretty cheap if that is in fact what it is circling this star. It says here that it will only be a few weeks before the ATA has a solid read on the emissions. We may know whether or not we have new radio pen pals by this Thanksgiving. In the meantime, Wright hopes to probe the system for more salient specifics, such as whether or not the star hosts planets. Given how far away the star is, finding planets will be an uphill battle. The star is not amenable to most forms of planet detection. We will do our best, however. Regardless of whether the dips in brightness are shaped by aliens, rogue comets, which of course is a theory, smashed planets, or any of the other numerous theories regarding its behavior, it is undeniably one odd stellar duck. Nothing else is like it in the skies. Aliens or not, that is more than enough reason to take a closer look at this tantalizing system. So, apparently before Thanksgiving, we're going to know a lot more. And, as noted, there are many things it could be. It could be some sort of moon or a planet that was destroyed, and it's a giant mass of junk that circles a star every 760 days or whatever it is. Or, in fact, it could be a huge extraterrestrial solar array circling the star. That is one of the suggestions. And this is not a bunch of dingbats on the internet making these suggestions. These are real scientists. This is a story that has been in real newspapers, New York Times, Wall Street Journal. This is a real story. And one way or another, something weird is going on with the star, and we should know more by Thanksgiving. To the studio line, you're on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Dave from Connecticut. How you doing, Brian?
Dave, what's going on?
A few things. One, I would just like to say your other site, I've been a subscriber for years, is awesome.
Thank you.
Two other things. Remember that guy you had on with the Zodiac book, that kind of thing?
Yes, I do.
Can he come back? Cause I want to see what the update is.
I will send that to my producer, and I will do my best to get him back.
Seriously, I think his dad might have been the Zodiac. Okay, one other thing. There's this book, When Prophecy Fails. I was wondering, you were talking about doing more sociological studies. You were talking about cults one day. You should have these guys on who wrote this book because they did a book about cults who had an end date, end times. And that date came and went. Now they wrote a book about the effects on the people. Could you have them on?
I would be happy to have them on. Tell me more about this book. Do they give any examples?
Yeah, there was a group called, like, the Seekers in New York. And, you know, they had the Jesus figure. You know that guy, right?
Yes.
It's every cult. And the guy had a date. It came, it went, and psychological turmoil happened. They gave all the money to this guy. This guy committed suicide, and now they're living with, God, we spent so many years with this guy. What was it all for?
It seems that there are a lot of cults that will give an end date, and then when the end date doesn't come, there's usually some explanation of, oh, we got the math wrong, or, oh, you know, we translated this verse from the Bible wrong. And now this is the new date. And sometimes it'll be date after date after date after date.
Yeah, I just think it's like one of the great ribs in cult history. I mean, it's a little funny when it comes and goes, but it's sad, too.
Well, send me the information, Brian, at AfterDarkRadioShow.com, and I'll pass it along, and we'll try and get him on the show.
See you later, Brian.
All right, thanks so much for the call. Phone numbers are up at AfterDarkRadioShow.com, as well as the text message line. Edgar in New York does not believe in this floating city in China. He says, smog created the floating city in China. So he does not, in fact, believe it's a floating city. He believes it's just a bunch of smog. I will check that out during the break here. This person says, Brian, I'm wondering if you have heard stories of people hearing chains rattling in their houses at night, and if any stood out in particular. What are your thoughts on this weird occurrence? It happened to me once when I was about 10 years old. Send me more information. If you want to send a longer email, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com, I'd be happy to read it on the air. We had a guy who called. I believe it was a guy who called. But it wasn't so much chains, but it was when he was in bed, he would hear the sound of people marching. I think it was like, it felt like the sound of people marching in his head. And then we had a number of people that said they'd had the same experience. So I have not heard the chain rattling story. I would love to hear your chain rattling story, especially with Halloween just wrapping up here. So send that to me either via text or brian@afterdarkradioshow.com, and I will be happy to read that here on the air. And if anybody remembers any of the details of the marching men in the ears, you can let me know. Eric here has sent a picture of what the guy was wearing. Essentially, it was an all-white bodysuit. What scared me was he slowed down when he passed me, turned his head, and kept on running. I guess this guy in the bodysuit running past him was just very, very freaky. A bunch of people here noting that we did, in fact, go offline. Several people here. Someone believes a psychic assault team got to me. Apparently, I was offline longer than I thought. Felt like it was just a moment, but maybe it wasn't. Maybe I was abducted by aliens. That's certainly odd. Our guest tonight is going to be Nicholas DeLeon. We got a lot to talk about in terms of tech. I like to mix it up here on the show. October, we had a lot of guests talking ghosts, seances, or not seances, exorcisms. I know there was a televised exorcism a couple of days ago. I got a lot of tweets about that saying it was very, very lame. If you'd like to call and talk about that, you're welcome to do so. But Matt Baglio was awesome last week talking exorcisms. But as noted, I do like to mix things up, and every now and then, Nicholas De Leon is a great guest to bring on. We're going to be talking about all sorts of things. I am an Apple. I'm a Mac man. I was a PC man for, let me think about this, 1995. I got my first PC laptop. And prior to that, I'd had computers as well, but I think, and this will, for those of you that are older, you may remember some of this, but when I was very young, I used a Commodore 64. And then after that, I had a programming class in middle school, and they were teaching us how to program on the Apple IIe. And then I remember I went to Radio Shack to buy a computer. That's right, Radio Shack back in the day. Not only was it still in business, but they sold computers, and I bought a Tandy computer, and it had like, it was like, what was it, 64K of RAM or something like that? I can't remember, and then I remember I upped it to 128 and then 256. This was way back in the day. So anyway, eventually I got a PC laptop, and it weighed about 100 pounds, and I believe it cost $3,000. My grandmother had to help me purchase this, and for years I was a PC guy. And then finally one day I was doing a bunch of downsizing. I was trying to simplify my life. Everybody said, Brian, you got to try a Mac. And I switched to Mac, and I've never looked back. So the Mac, the iPhone, big fan. We're going to be talking about some of that stuff tonight. The brand new Apple TV, all sorts of tech, and of course Android and stuff like that as well. But one thing that Nicholas is going to be talking about, I just want to warn everybody, we're not going to do this in a salacious manner, but he is going to talk a little bit about virtual reality porn. He was provided with a virtual reality headset and I believe a membership to a porn site. And so he wrote an article about it because virtual reality porn is starting to catch on. We're not going to talk about it in a lewd manner, but we're just going to talk a little bit about it, what it is, and why it is interesting that the porn industry is jumping on virtual reality. This, of course, will lead into a discussion of virtual reality in general. Is virtual reality the next big thing? Quite a while ago, we had Nicholas on the show, and we were talking about 3D televisions. And I remember when I was a kid, there was 3D TVs, or not 3D TVs, but you could go to like a 3D movie and you'd put the goofy glasses on. And for a while there, 3D was big in the theaters and you had to wear the glasses. And then 3D TVs came along and I always kind of felt, this is not going to catch on because you've got to wear glasses. If they could figure out some sort of television that you could watch 3D without the 3D glasses, maybe that would be something. And so we're going to talk about virtual reality because in order to, whether it be virtual reality porn or virtual reality trips to a museum, or I believe I think there was a Republican debate that they aired, and if you had a virtual reality headset, you could watch it. Imagine the excitement of the Republican debate with a virtual reality headset on. But the point is, you got to wear this big headset. And so my question to him will be, is this going to catch on if you've got to wear this big, giant headset? How much does this stuff cost? Is this the next big thing? I'm going to talk about that with Nicholas and a number of other topics as well. It's going to be a fun time. So we're going to head to a break. And when we come back, Nicholas De Leon of Vice is going to be talking, Vice, ironically, is going to be talking technology. So stand by, everybody. Back in just a moment with more After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. We'll be right back. back here on After Dark Radio. Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio on the Dark Matter Digital Network. Very happy today to be joined by our tech guy. Nicholas De Leon is here on the air, Vice now. And Nicholas, yes. How you doing?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
Not too bad. What's been happening? I see you're now working for Vice.
Yeah, I am an editor at Motherboard, which is Vice's science and technology website. I'm in charge of the new consumer technology section, which we're calling Short Circuit. And the idea is, you know, Motherboard has a sort of long history of doing like really deep reporting on maybe sort of the fringes of like internet culture, things like Bitcoin and the Silk Road and piracy and some more hard science topics. And my job is to sort of introduce more of the sort of mainstream everyday consumer tech stuff, you know, iPhone, Google, Instagram, Facebook, all the fun stuff that all the kids love to play with nowadays. It's my job to sort of build out that coverage a little bit.
Now, I'm not sure the last time you were on the show, but had Circa gone down the last time we had you on?
No. When we last spoke in early May, and Circa publicly went under about a month later. I found out after speaking to you probably a week after our conversation, I sort of learned internally that things weren't looking great at Circa. So we last spoke, and in the blink of an eye, Circa was no more. And if anyone's asking, what is Circa? Circa was a mobile news startup that I was the tech editor of for about 2.5 years. And, you know, it was a great idea, news optimized for your mobile device, but, you know, startups fail all the time. And, you know, for whatever one reason or another, mainly related to the business side of things, Circa is no longer with us. But it was a great experience. All the guys have, they've all landed at different spots. One guy is now an editor at Fortune. One guy now actually works at The Daily Show with Trevor Noah. So that's pretty cool. So most of the folks have landed on their feet. And yeah, it was a fun experience, but I'm at Vice now. So yeah.
How ironic you're at Vice when we're going to talk today about virtual reality porn. I know it doesn't sound like a regular topic for After Dark, but I'm bringing it up because you did do an article about virtual reality porn. And whether we're talking about porn or anything else, we need to talk about virtual reality and whether this is a technology that is going to grow, is going to be the next 3D television, what it's going to be here. And before we get into it, I want you to talk a little bit about what the New York Times is doing with their cardboard virtual reality headset that some people are getting. Let's kick it off with that.
Yeah, so in a couple weeks, the Times is going to be sending all of their print subscribers and a certain sort of subset of their digital subscribers a free Google Cardboard VR viewer. And Google Cardboard, for anyone who doesn't know, is literally a piece of cardboard folded in such a way that you can place a smartphone inside it. And it's got some lenses in there. So basically you can use it as a VR viewer. It kind of looks like those old ViewMaster toys that existed, 20 years ago, whatever it was. And so the Times is basically going to use the initiative to debut VR documentaries. The first documentary, I believe, is about refugees. And, you know, the Times says, you know, we're interested in all new platforms, and we are big believers in the potential for VR. And so they're going to try to see, how they can sort of take their journalism and bring it into a new platform, which has the potential to be a pretty big deal. I mean, as probably most people listening know, Facebook a little over a year ago bought Oculus VR for like $2 billion. And that's obviously, I mean, that's nothing to Facebook, but that's a lot of money. And it just shows that, you know, if Facebook, which is, the king of consumer tech and trying to know like what regular folks are into, if they're making a $2 billion bet on VR, it's probably a good indication that it's going to be a very big deal. So that's what the Times is thinking, to sort of see how they can sort of, get ahead and jump into this new exciting platform with some documentary.
Now, when people think of cutting-edge technology, they may not think of pornography or pro wrestling, but the reality is that pro wrestling and pornography, well, they have a lot in common, but one of the things that they have in common is that they are often at the cutting edge of technology. Whenever there is a new technology that is available, you will often see pornography and pro wrestling jumping on those new forms of technology to try to stay ahead of the curve. And right. as we'll talk about here with pornography, one of the reasons that porn is going hard into virtual reality, so to speak, is because there used to be all of these, and I'm sure there still are a lot of subscription sites for pornography, but you've also got all sorts of areas around the internet where you can watch it for free. And so by jumping into virtual reality, the subscription sites that you have to pay for are giving porn aficionados something that they're not necessarily getting for free elsewhere. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're correct in porn has a sort of long and glorious history of being at the forefront of technology. Porn studios were one of the first, you know, adopters of VHS back in the day. They were, one of the first sort of wave of websites that accepted like credit card payments over the internet. They were at the head of the, head of the pack with HD, 10 years ago, whatever it was. VR is the next step. And you're right that, currently at least you can't, these sort of files don't exist for free online. It's not like one of those, one of those tube sites that are all over the place. So for right now, if you want to experience the best in adult entertainment in VR, you have to subscribe. There's a couple companies we looked at two recently here at Motherboard. One is Dorcel Media, which is a French company, and another one is called Badoink VR, and it's amazingly like in-depth process, like the number of cameras and the tech that they have to use to actually to take this footage is above and beyond like what they had to do before. And in reading some interviews with some of the directors, some of the folks actually in this business, it totally changes the way that not only the equipment that they have to use, but like the positioning and the direction. And it's not just a fancy new camera. There's a whole lot involved here. I used it, a couple days ago, and my sort of overall impressions were, that it was, it's more immersive. There's no getting around the fact that it's weird, right? Like you're sitting, you've got this headset on your face, which is already a little bulky to begin with. And you're sort of enveloped, in 3D content or virtual, content just all over the place. It's definitely a little weird, but there's no question that it's a different level of immersion, which is absolutely what they're selling. Whether or not this provides like a gigantic boost to the sort of adult entertainment industry, whether they're sort of similar to like newspapers and stuff, where the internet has sort of decimated their old business model. Whether or not that changes things, I'm not too sure. But it is definitely. It is definitely an interesting experience, I will say that.
Okay, now if you don't have one of the cardboard headsets that's being mailed out by the New York Times, if I wanted to get heavy into this virtual reality porn, these, you have to wear like this giant headset, correct?
Right.
What do these run for?
Samsung sells one called the Gear VR, which is what we've got here. Samsung loaned us one for stores like this. About $100. There's going to be a new version that comes out in November. It's about $100. But the Oculus VR, which is Oculus VR is the name of the company. The Oculus Rift is the actual headset. That the consumer version should be out early next year, is what they're saying. And that's a little different in that with the Gear VR, all you need to do is to plug in your Samsung smartphone, which a lot of people already have. With the Oculus Rift, you'll need a pretty beefy PC to get that to work. That's initially being aimed at, sort of hardcore gamers who are really into, the fancy 3D graphics and all that type of stuff. But the Gear VR is sort of like an in-between where it's like, odds are you've already got a Samsung smartphone. For $100, you could buy this headset and you just plug the phone in and you hit play and you're off and running. So it depends on what sort of experience you want, but you can jump into VR for, a cardboard is like Google sells them for like $20 on their website. And there's a bunch of different companies who make, there's like various degrees of how fancy the cardboard unit can be. But they usually start at like 20 and they top out at something like 50. So you can get into VR for fairly cheap. And, you know, it goes from there. So it doesn't necessarily require a gigantic investment, but obviously the more you spend, the higher quality you'll get.
Okay, so that was my question, because I was looking at the whole thing thinking, well, you know, very, very few people have a 4K television, and it seems like porn would be leapfrogging over 4K to the technology beyond 4K, but the way that you're describing it, it's much, much cheaper to get into virtual reality than it is to get into a 4K television.
Well, I mean, you can find 4K TVs nowadays for just about under $1,000. They're, you know, it's not as expensive as it was, you know, maybe 2 years ago. They're getting to the price where the sort of average Joe on the street can afford one. But yeah, to jump into VR, you know, you can literally just get a Google Cardboard or one of the variants that they sell for like $20 or whatever, and plug in any Android smartphone, and that's a sort of bare bones VR experience. Or if you've got a Samsung Galaxy smartphone, one of the newer models, you can get the $100 Gear VR, and that's slightly better quality. So it's not a gigantic investment, but you should do your research if you're investigating jumping into this world, I suppose.
Now, first off, where does the term Oculus Rift come from?
I have no idea, actually.
Really?
I don't know what that's in reference to.
Yeah. Okay, I mean, because here's, I don't read a lot of sci-fi, I don't watch a lot of sci-fi. I mean, Star Wars is about the extent of it. And I know, I'm positive, that I have heard the term Oculus Rift long before this headset existed, which is probably a topic for After Dark now that I think about it. If anybody knows where that came from, there's no way that it was invented in the last 4 or 5 years or whatever. I know when I first heard that as the name of the headset, I was like, oh man, what are they naming that after? Because I'd heard that. I know I'd heard that before, unless I'm completely out of my mind, or a time traveler, one or the other. Now, you wrote the article about sampling this for the virtual reality porn. And as you kind of mentioned, I mean, you're wearing this big, bulky gimmick on your head. It's sort of like, I don't know. I always felt that one of the reasons that 3D television never made it was because you had to wear the goofy glasses. And if somebody had figured out a way to make, like, holographic 3D television where you didn't actually have to wear the gimmick on your head, then maybe it would have caught on much bigger than it did. I mean, we've talked many times about how 3D television just, they've tried many times, it's never worked.
Right.
What do you think is the future of virtual reality with all of these giant headsets? Is this a fad?
Well, I would say at least in the short term, I mean, Oculus Rift, it will be the big, you know, killer device in the next year or so. That's not out yet. That comes out early next year. And yeah, for the first wave of these things, they're definitely going to be aimed at sort of the tech early adopter, the guy who's super into this type of stuff and who doesn't mind, you know, sitting with a giant headset on their head and, you know, entering a virtual world. That is not the mainstream consumer at all. That is a certain type of person who is into that type of thing. But as, you know, as the technology develops and as things get cheaper and as things get better, you know, maybe they won't be as heavy, you know, just like smartphones. I mean, look at, you know, smartphones barely just 10 years ago, but, you know, even the iPhone, which it came out in 2007, the current model, the 6S is, you know, it's way thinner, way lighter, way, you know, significantly better than the first model. So just like everything else, it'll get cheaper and better as the years go on. And, you know, again, if companies like Facebook are behind this, they're going to be pushing it really hard to try to make it a successful platform. It's sort of the medium to long term, I think, goal with, you know, VR as, you know, as a thing, as kids might say, is, you know, just to break it out beyond just video games. The first few sort of, use cases will be, you know, 3D games for the PC. Sony's got a VR unit coming out soon for the PS4 as well. So that will be the first sort of application for VR, you know, high-end gaming. But again, that's not every consumer out there. The idea is, you know, maybe, you know, in the medium to long term to make VR, you know, the next sort of mass sort of experience, meaning that, you know, you could be sitting at home and you're taking a virtual tour of Paris. You could be sitting at home and you're walking around a museum you've never been to. You could be, you know, sitting in your living room and, you know, now you're you're passing through the coral reefs. The idea is to make it more of a mass consumption item, so it's not just, you know, guys who are super into gaming, to make it more of a mainstream activity. That is certainly the goal, and that there are a bunch of companies working on making that a reality. But for the short term, they will be big, bulky, and heavy, and you will need to be dedicated to get anything out of it.
Seems like it'd be easier and more fun to just go to the museum.
It might be.
Old. You know, not, is that the problem?
Maybe. And I mean, I've also read an article recently where the idea, you know, you could, you know, apartments in New York City are not particularly large. You know, I don't know how they are, you know, in the greater Seattle area, but here in New York, they're generally pretty small. So, you know, maybe someone comes out with a VR app, you know, in the future where you're sitting in your small apartment, but you've got your VR headset on, and all of a sudden it seems like you're in some grand, large apartment. Even though you're just sitting in your normal studio apartment in the city, you have the illusion and the feeling of being in something a little bigger and a little more nice to sit in. So that's one of the more longer term applications for this. But yeah, it's not always easy to get to a museum. And maybe you live in a rural area where there's not a whole lot around. You know, not everyone lives in a major urban area where there's great museums and so forth. Or maybe you'll never be able to take that trip to Paris. You're never going to get to go to London. But, you know, for, you know, a couple $100, maybe you can download a VR app and pretend you're, you know, walking through the Louvre or walking by the Eiffel Tower, that type of thing. That's sort of the overall goal of VR is to sort of bring you to places where you can't get to or where you can't get to very easily. That's sort of the grand dream, I suppose.
And now I don't want to dwell on this virtual reality porn, so this will be my last question, but let's imagine that someone is in their room enjoying some virtual pornography, and they've got this giant Oculus Rift gimmick on their head, and mom walks in.
Right.
This seems like it would be just a comedy of disasters. You got this thing on your head. How do you know when someone opens a door? You can't see anything. You're trying to turn to the door, but this woman just won't go away.
Yeah, that seems like that would be a tricky. I mean, I hope that doesn't happen to you or anyone you know. But yeah, that seems like that would be very embarrassing. And I don't know. Maybe you could just tell mom that you're. I don't know. You're playing a racing game. I don't know why. Maybe you're
playing a racing game.
Yeah.
Don't come in, Mom. I may crash.
Down. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe lock the door is what I could say.
Sure. Yeah. All right. Let's move on here. What other cool stuff is coming out? Anything that really is, you're just thinking, man, I can't believe. Here it is, 2015, and we're finally getting this hoverboard, for example.
I'm afraid things aren't quite that great. I mean, more longer term, you've got companies like Tesla who are, you know, pushing full speed ahead with the electric car. And then there are rumors that they are developing, you know, self-driving car technology. There are also reports that Apple is sort of looking into getting into the car business. So there's a lot surrounding the automobile and what the automobile of the future will look like. But that's years away. I would say, you know, more short term, you know, everyone, how often do you, Brian, hear about cord cutters and, you know, ratings and all this type of stuff? I mean, WWE just announced their quarterly earnings yesterday. And from what I understand, they tried to downplay the fact that TV ratings are down because that's just one, you know, one metric that they look at. They also consider social media and all that stuff. So, you know, with that in mind, Apple today released the latest version of their Apple TV, which is sort of like a Roku. Amazon has a model. All the big companies have streaming set-top boxes, and what sort of sets the Apple TV apart, which we just got yesterday here at Motherboard, there are two things. One is built-in Siri, which is their voice recognition software. So you could be sitting in front of the TV, you tap a button, and you can ask Siri, you know, show me the episode of Friends where Chandler stubs his toe. I've never watched Friends. I don't know if that's actually happened. But the idea is that you could sort of get into that granular level of, of detail, and you know, rather than having to hunt and peck through the sort of the Netflix, just outright ask. And Siri does in fact let you launch apps via voice. So I was last night testing it, and in fact the WWE Network app does work. You could say launch WWE, and it'll bring you right to the network. So that's going to be a big thing heading into this holiday season. What else? I would say.
Let's start with Apple TV then. We'll go there and then we'll move on. So okay. I have the Apple TV right here, and yes, one of the things that is kind of frustrating about it is when you want to search for something, you've got the goofy little clicker, and it can take quite a while to type something into that search deal right there. There's no keyboard. I know that Siri obviously would make it easier, but I have also heard that there have been people, and maybe this was in your article, I'm not sure, but I've heard that people have tried to search for an actor's name, and when you say someone's name, Siri will spell it wrong, and then zero results will come up, and it's kind of frustrating there. I'm not sure if there's anything that could be done about that, but I do hear that there is an improved clicker, at least.
Yes, just
remote.
To that point you just brought up, I asked during the demonstration with Apple yesterday, you know, find me Arnold Schwarzenegger movies, and it worked. So, I mean, if it could spell Arnold Schwarzenegger, obviously voice recognition.
Well, I think it's something like if you had a name like Thompson and there was no P in it, maybe it would spell
right.
You know what I mean?
Right. That may pop up. I mean, voice recognition isn't perfect, I would say. To be honest, I've only tested it maybe like an hour last night. But in my test, it's generally pretty okay. You know, nothing's perfect. And it'll get better with software updates. But there is a new remote. The old Apple TV remote, I think we can all agree, wasn't necessarily the best piece of hardware that Apple produced. It was super thin. It had a sort of tendency to just like fall in between like the cushions of your couch.
I lost that thing a million times.
It was just a great device. The new remote is much improved. It's sort of split in half. The top half has a sort of touch-sensitive pad, almost like a trackpad on your laptop, where you could sort of scroll across the page, and you know, depending on how fast you move your thumb across, the cursor on screen will respond in kind, and you can obviously click and make a selection. So it's much better. And then there are dedicated volume buttons this time. It's so funny, like how you never really think that a remote is a big deal until you actually use a significantly better one, and then you wonder, well, how did I ever use that old remote? This is not my official review yet. I still have to play around with it this weekend. Probably our review will go up Monday or Tuesday. I'm shooting for Monday. But my early test, I mean, it's super impressive. It's a little on the expensive side. It starts at $150. I mean, if you're really only interested in watching Netflix on your TV or watching Hulu or the WWE Network or what have you, there are cheaper options out there. You can get a Chromecast that's like $35. You can get Roku sells like the Roku Stick. There's the Amazon Stick. There are cheaper ways to get streaming video on your TV. There are pros and cons to each device. But if you're literally only concerned with watching Netflix on the big screen, maybe the Apple TV isn't necessarily for you. But if the idea of like voice search and an app store, which is the second sort of big addition to the Apple TV this time, just like the iPhone and the iPad, they have an app store. Now the Apple TV will have an app store so developers can, make their apps. Some of it's Apple makes sure that, they're not breaking any rules or anything like that. And, your app is now on the TV. And the first wave are, there's fairly simple games. It all reminds me of the Nintendo Wii a little bit where, the games, you're not exactly playing Halo or Call of Duty level games on this. They're simpler. They're more, simple sports games, simple puzzle games. But those will get better. Those will get more, as Apple sells these things and as developers realize, hey, wait a minute, there's all these Apple TV, units floating around. Maybe it's worth our while to, see if we can make a game for this thing. So this is all, it's just getting into stores today, this new model. So we'll see what sort of developers do once people actually get their hands on it. But it's super impressive, a little on the pricey side if you're only concerned with streaming, but I think there's enough extra there where you should do your homework to see exactly what it is you're trying to do, you know, particularly if you are, you know, considering cutting the cord altogether, which is, you know, another thing that's sort of floating around the media these days, the idea of cord cutting. If you're going to go hardcore like that, you should probably double check to make sure what it is you actually want to watch and to see what is the sort of best avenue to get there.
Now, I know that you're a big fan of the Chromecast, and the Chromecast is like $40 or less. And obviously the new Apple TV, I think, is up to $149. And one of the things, I read one review that said that this new Apple TV, I mean, at this point, it's blown away everything else except no 4K. And the Roku can do 4K, and the Chromecast can do 4K. Why no 4K on Apple TV?
I believe Apple, I don't actually know if Apple made an official statement on it, but I believe the reasoning is that, to be honest, it's just not a whole lot of 4K content out there right now. So, you know, if it's a matter of, you know, putting hardware into the device that can support 4K and that raises the price of the device, you know, X percent, or just leaving that out for, you know, a year or two, waiting till 4K content is developed, and maybe they revisit that, you know, again in a year or two. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't support 4K. I personally do not have a 4K television, so I personally do not miss it. But if you do, yeah, that's another consideration because, like you said, the newest Roku does support 4K. The newest Amazon Fire TV does support 4K. And there are certain House of Cards and Netflix that was filmed in 4K. So it's slow and steady, just like the HD was, you know, 10 years ago, where not everything was in HD automatically. You know, it takes time for you know, production companies to upgrade the cameras and all of that whole production rigmarole. So it'll get there, but I believe the reasoning is there's just not enough 4K content currently out there to sort of justify the price increase that they would need to do to pack that hardware in there.
Now, I know a couple of other things that I wanted to talk about, including this. You mentioned WWE and their earnings, all the stuff they're doing with the WWE Network. One thing that they mentioned was they see all of this money down the road in social media, and they never explained where this money was coming from. And that brings us to Twitter, which obviously has had all sorts of problems. I believe they laid off, I can't remember what percentage it was, but it was like 300 employees. And let's start at the beginning here. I am sure that I'm just naive, but I use Twitter every day, and if you explain to me why they need thousands of employees, what are these thousands of people doing every day to keep Twitter going?
Well, I mean, I suppose that was the same consideration that Jack Dorsey, who was recently appointed full-time CEO, he had taken over an interim basis in July, I believe. That's sort of the conclusion he came to, too. I mean, look, all these sort of companies, Twitter and Facebook, they may just seem like, oh, it's just a website. Oh, it's just an app. But there's, you know, a gigantic infrastructure underneath that app to make sure that, you know, thousands and millions of tweets are flowing across the internet the instant you hit send, or, you know, no matter where you are, your phone will buzz anytime someone, you know, tweets at you. So there's definitely a deceptive amount of activity going on behind the scenes that you may not necessarily, you know, you just don't know when you're just like a regular user of the site. So that's not all together too surprising. But I believe I would probably say, I don't want to accuse you of being in a bubble, Brian, but, you know, I am on Twitter.
I admit.
I'm on Twitter. I'm on Twitter all day, every day. But that is because I'm a member of the media. If I were not a member of the media, would I be on Twitter all day, every day? I don't know. That's a good question. What do I use Twitter for nowadays? Will I use it to, you know, to read the news, to keep up on things, and to make sure that, you know, so that we're covering currently breaking news on Motherboard? I use it to keep in contact with consumer tech stuff, with news. Not everyone has those same considerations. You, I'm sure, use it for, you know, wrestling and MMA and all that type of stuff. We all have our...
Well, I use it for the exact same reason. I'm just doing wrestling news and such as opposed to tech.
Right, of course. But, I mean, does the average sort of person do that? Do they necessarily need to be glued to their phone or to their computer all day, every day to get the latest breaking news the second it happens? I don't know. Maybe they don't. Maybe they're fully satisfied with, you know, using Facebook to, you know, keep in contact with their friends and all that type of stuff. Maybe that's sufficient for them. And that's sort of the consideration that Twitter has made. What was it? A couple of weeks ago, they released a feature called Moments, which the idea is, you know, you don't have to necessarily have the perfect timeline of people you follow. You jump into the Moments section, and they've got all the day's events there laid out for you in easy to sort of consume format. You know, the World Series, the Republican debate, any sort of event that's going on, you know, at that time, you could just jump into the moment section and you're sort of caught up. The idea is to sort of make Twitter a little easier to use so it's not a daunting just stream of random comments from people you don't know. Twitter is it takes time to understand and to use properly. I mean, I've been on it, I think I joined in early 2008, so, you know, I already have the hang of it type of thing. But if you were, you know, a new user to the site today and you just join and you don't really know what it is, you know, you've heard it, you've heard, you know, your favorite TV show, you know, mention, oh, you know, tweet us now or something like that. So you're aware of it, but you're not really sure what it is that you can do with it. It can be a little daunting, and that is something that they're trying to fix with some of these new initiatives like the Moments thing that I just mentioned a minute ago. So yeah, I know Twitter's a super fascinating company because it seems like the people who use it really use it and they love it, and the people who don't use it don't really get it. And I think that's the sort of the core problem that they're trying to address right now.
Well, I mean, I look at WWE's business earnings. This is just one random company. It can be any company, everybody. We're not focusing on wrestling here, but I look at their business and they're doing very, very well. And all of their income generators are traditional things. And I suppose you could argue that because they have so many Facebook and Twitter followers, maybe when they were looking to sign a new television deal, that helped them leverage a better deal because maybe these television companies saw all of those followers and thought, okay, this is going to equal ratings. Now, I really don't think that's the case because these companies have been in bed with WWE forever, and so they're well aware of what the viewership is going to be. I have never seen, through the rise of their Facebook and Twitter followers, I've never seen anything that has shown me that that has helped their business at all. Right. I use Twitter every day. You use Twitter every day. And I've never spent one penny on Twitter. I don't know if you've ever spent one penny on Twitter. I would think that if anybody's going to spend a penny on Twitter, it would be me and you. Your average person, I think, is even less likely to spend any money on Twitter. I'm just still confused, I guess as a traditional business person, how this can be properly monetized in a substantial way.
Well, I mean, like most sort of consumer apps, Twitter's idea is to get to scale, to have, you know, lots and lots of users, and to show these lots and lots of users ads. I mean, that's basically why Facebook is worth so much money, because they literally have 1 billion users on that thing. If you have a billion users and you're Coca-Cola, yeah, that sounds like an attractive, you know, group of folks to advertise to. Twitter's problem is that, you know, it's pretty much stuck at 300 million users, which is, you know, obviously that's a lot of people, but it's not anywhere near a billion, and it has not really grown at all in the past year. It's pretty much been stuck at 300. So the concern is that, okay, is 300, like, is this the max? Is that all the people that are going to use it? And if that's the case, well then, you know, if I'm a big company, if I'm Coca-Cola or Ford or whatever it is, you know, am I going to take the time to advertise in front of a billion people or 300 million? You know, those are the type of conversations that they're having and that they're trying to figure out. But yeah, it is interesting. It is interesting. I mean, they do make money. They're not profitable. They definitely generate revenue. They're promoted tweets and all that type of stuff. So they're definitely pulling in money. Not quite profitable yet. But yeah, it's like I said, it's a super fascinating company because it just seems to be, maybe not divisive is not the word, but like, again, you use it and you're into it, or you're just sort of ambivalent about it. But yeah, I don't know. Good luck to them, I guess is what I would say.
Eric here says he does not like how the iPhone 6 is bigger than the previous generations. Any news on the size of future generations?
I mean, I don't see them getting smaller. I mean, what is it, 4.7 inches? Yeah, I would not expect that to go down. I would say I personally own an iPhone 6, and that is probably going to be the smallest phone that Apple makes from here on out, just because bigger phones sell. I mean, it was only a couple years ago that Samsung released the Galaxy Note. I think it was 2011, and it was something like, maybe I think it was 5.5 inches, if I'm not mistaken. And when that came out, the iPhone at the time was like 3.5 inches. So it was a dramatically bigger phone. And people were like losing their minds online. Like, how could they make such a giant phone? And it turns out that the Galaxy Note like sold super well. And from then, you know, from then on, everyone came out with reasonably big phones. So people like big phones. That's not, I don't think that's going away. You know, it just makes it easier to, you know, to watch YouTube on it, to, you know, if you use it as a GPS device in your car, it's easier to see the map. I mean, the benefits of having a bigger phone are pretty obvious. For the people who prefer, you know, smaller phones, whether they have smaller hands or, you know, whatever the reason is, you know, there are companies that still make smaller devices. Google just came out with the Nexus. They just released two new Nexus smartphones, which is their, like, flagship smartphone, the Nexus 6P and the 5X. The 6P is you know, a big phone that, you know, really only appeals to guys who like big phones. The 5X is a little bit more, you know, quote unquote, normal size. It's marginally larger than the iPhone 6. I think it's like 5.2 inches. I'm not sure actually offhand, but it's a little bit smaller. But yeah, as far as iPhones getting smaller, I don't see that. I mean, you can always buy an old one. They're definitely available on eBay and Amazon and all those types of things. But yeah, I would say the sizes we're at now are probably going to be sticking around with us for a little while.
I remember when the iPhone first came out and everybody had these goofy little, you had like a flip phone or you had those big, thick Nokia phones. And all of a sudden, here's this phone that's like, it's small and it's thin and it's really cool. And it was neat that it was small and thin. But as you noted, now that there are so many mobile sites and there's YouTube and everything like that, I got an iPhone 6 as well. And to me, this is now a good size. Like, the one I had before this ended up being too small. And my wife has got the bigger one. I don't know if it's a 6S or whatever. And that to me is like, it's cool, but it's bordering on being too big. It doesn't fit in my pocket quite right. And so I think that this is a good size, but times are going to change and people's demands will change. And I'm sure the size will go up and down.
Yeah. I mean, when the iPhone first came out in 2007, I remember, you know, Apple used to claim that, 3.5 inches is the perfect size, you know, but things changed, you know, as smartphones became more commonplace, as developers made more apps and as, you know, as video services like Netflix, Hulu and all, you know, all the usual suspects, as they became more popular in mobile devices, you know, you want a bigger screen. You know, we're not going to be carrying around, you know, tablets in our pockets. You know, they don't need to be that big. But I think we're sort of getting to the sweet spot right now. Right around 5 inches is probably where things will settle at for at least a little while. And, you know, who knows? You know, maybe there'll be some new app that just drives people to want an even bigger screen. But I would say right around 5 inches is probably where we're going to be for a little while.
I don't know if you know anything about this, but I went to sell, or I wasn't going to sell it, but I was going to get a new Apple TV. This was a while ago. And I was going to, I had an old one. And so I asked them, do you buy these back? Because they buy back iPads and that sort of thing. And he explained to me that if you've got the original version of the Apple TV, that one will sell on eBay for more than you paid for it. But all of the others will sell for less. There was something about it. I don't know if you could jailbreak it, or I don't know what the story was. Do you know anything about that? It was very weird.
Not offhand, no. I mean, the original, I believe it included like a hard drive, if I'm not mistaken. So it was basically more computer-like than the current Apple TV that just came out, but the model that has been floating around for the past couple of years. But no, offhand, I don't know the exact reason. I'm not sure. I mean, there's also interest in maybe in the nostalgia of just having the first generation Apple TV, you know, but, at, you know, in actual technical reason, I'm not sure offhand.
Now, we know that there's been a big switch from desktop computers to things like the iPad and tablets and such. I get all of these stats for our website, and the last time I checked, we have, it wasn't quite 50%, but it was close to 50% of the people that are visiting our site regularly are doing so on a mobile device, either a phone or a tablet, which just a few years ago, this would be like completely unheard of for us, but it's now 50%. How are things changing in terms of desktop computers, mobile sites, mobile websites, tablets, etc.?
Right. Shipments of desktop computers have been basically shrinking for past 2 or 3 years. They're definitely not growing, and they're, you know, they're, it, how often do you buy a new laptop? Not too often, I would gather. Whereas, you know, most folks are replacing their phone, you know, every 2 years, if not every year. It's pretty clear that the smartphone is the key device going forward. It's definitely the rate at which people have adopted smartphones, like, way outpaces the rate at which people, you know, the rate at which people bought TVs, the rate at which people bought, you know, desktop computers. It is like the singular fastest, like, adoption rate of any sort of consumer tech on the planet. So it is definitely the key device. And yeah, your stats where, you know, roughly half your visitors are coming from a mobile device, that's not shocking at all. I mean, that's the way the world is going. I think, you know, just thinking me personally, even, you know, 3-4 years ago when I would go to your site, odds are I would be on my computer. Nowadays, when I come home from work, you know, I'm happy to browse the board on my phone. I'm happy to, check the headlines on my phone. There's not that same necessity to, you know, turn on my computer, wait for it to load, you know, launch Chrome and you know, click the book. Like, if that's a bit of a hassle now compared to just whipping out my phone and going to the site. So that's definitely not changing. That is the present, and that is the future. So it is, and it's exciting. It's a brand new thing that, you know, everyone's carrying around in their pocket. That was sort of the vision of Circa, where it's like everyone's got these smartphones in their pocket. You know, what can we do with this thing? And that's why you've got all these sort of app developers trying to figure out, you know, how can we sort of use this, you know, pocket computer and, you know, cynically, how can we use it to make some money, or how can we use it to, you know, improve people's lives? It is a very exciting, just a thing that we all have these internet connected computers on our persons 24 hours a day. That may sound scary to some people, but there's no question that it is immensely beneficial for any number of reasons.
One other thing that I wanted to make sure that we talked about in terms of all of this mobile and it is a, I remember, let's just put it this way. I remember when there were all of these Napster and Kazaa, all of these.
Right.
And, you know, people wanted to get their music there. They didn't want to go buy the whole CD. And it was like, oh my God, the music industry is dying a death. And then iTunes came out and you could buy any song you wanted for 99 cents. And all of a sudden, everybody was paying for these songs. And now we're at this point where I can just tell you how it is for me. You can tell me if I'm an outlier or if this is becoming a common thing.
Right.
Hulu, it was $7.99, but you still had all of these ads. I can pay $11 now, and there will be no ads. And to me, this was totally worth it, and I did it. There's a new thing coming out with YouTube Red. And
yes.
YouTube Red, I think it's like 10 bucks a month, but
yeah,
there are no ads. You can download videos for offline viewing. One thing that is totally worth $10 for me is, in the old days, if you were watching a video on YouTube on your phone and you wanted to listen to like an interview or something in your car and you hit that little button and switched off YouTube, it would die. But now,
right,
with this YouTube Red, there's background viewing. So you can listen to it while you're using another app on your phone. And again,
right,
this to me, totally worth $10. It seems that there's been kind of a shift where in the old days, there were people coming up that didn't want to pay for anything online. Everything online should be free. And now it does appear that if it's the right thing for the right price, and I've kind of known this for a decade now, people will pay for it. Does there seem to be a shift in that direction now?
Well, speaking as someone in publishing and the news business, that is a super important question to ask. It's whether or not people are in fact willing to pay for content online. I mean, you look at a company like Spotify, where they have something like, 60 million users, really only, a fraction of those people are actually paying for the service. They're using the ad-supported free version. Something like, compare that to Apple Music, which launched, and, very clear distinction, there is no sort of free tier. If you want to use Apple Music, which is very similar to Spotify, but if you want to use Apple Music, you have to pay, at least $9.99 per month to use, on demand and all that stuff. So that is the question. I mean, I've always been of the mind that, if something is worthwhile, you would pay for it. Like I will pay for your guys' website until you shut it down. Like that is a valuable thing to me. It could be $10, it could be $100, whatever it is. That is something that I like it and I will pay for it. End of story. Is that the same? Is that true of YouTube? Is that true of Spotify? I don't know. I did sign up for YouTube Red just to test it out, and I do, I do find it useful, like you said, to sort of have things running on in the background. I think that's a useful thing. Whether once I'm done with this first month, will I keep it? Not sure. But yeah, it is an interesting sort of. You see more of these experiments where people are, instead of just relying on going back to Twitter, where Twitter is free, they're not charging you. They're just hoping that there's enough users there where they can turn around and sell ads. Now the hope is that, advertising is great, but maybe let's actually try to, directly make money off the people who use our product. What a novel concept. It's very funny because, again, speaking as someone in news, there is also the whole ad blocking debate. I don't know if that has affected you guys at all, but, publishers are complaining that, you're going to our website and you're reading our stories and you're blocking, you're blocking the ads that pay the bills. And there's, a number of debates going back and forth, whether that's moral, whether that's ethical. There are, some security implications. Sometimes you go to a website and, an ad loads and that ad happens to be infected with malware. And now all of a sudden your computer is infected with malware. Who's responsible for that? It can get really hairy really quickly. But just the idea of, relying entirely upon advertising is something that I'm sure most companies would, you don't want to be too dependent upon advertising, I guess. If you're Facebook and you have a billion users, that's not an issue whatsoever. But if you don't have a billion users, I don't know if you guys have a billion users, maybe close.
No.
It doesn't hurt to actually generate revenue from your customers was sort of always my thinking. Why not, right? Why not actually make money? Why not offer a product that people like and have
sure.
to pay for it?
What
a crazy concept.
I mean, as a business person, I would appreciate if people left the ads there and we got a little bit of revenue off of it, but I've always looked at it the same way that I looked at, when advertisers get upset about a DVR, oh my God, a DVR allows people to skip commercials. Like, this is some revolutionary thing. Was there not a remote control before there was a DVR? Was there not a VCR? Was there not the little thing that you stand up and you go over and you turn the channel back in the 50s? I mean, if you don't want to watch a commercial, yes, a DVR makes it easy with a click of a button if you're watching later. But whether a person has a DVR or not, they don't have to watch commercials. There are ways around them. People have been blocking ads since there have been ads.
Right. If you're reading a magazine, you don't necessarily have to look at the ad. You can just turn the page.
You can turn the page. That is allowed.
You can, if you're watching TV, you can get up and you can get some chips or get a soda. There's no one enforcing the fact that you have to watch ads. So the whole, again, that's, sort of goes back to my thinking that, what a crazy concept to actually be paid for the product that you produce. Depending upon advertising, it's great. And, obviously it supports a number of different businesses, but there's always going to be that tension where you're not really sure if they're watching and whether or not they can easily skip it. It just gets very tricky to sort of deal with all that.
Now, before we go, let's talk about some of the other stories that you're working on. Has any fun stuff showed up at the offices for you to check out?
We actually did just get our review copy of Fallout 4, which is the big video game this fall. I haven't even opened it yet. I have zero opinion on it. I'm sure it's great, given all the previews have said it's great, but that just arrived. Our Apple TV review will be going up in the next couple of days. it's going to be a sort of busy season. Again, like I said towards the beginning, this is all new for Motherboard. Motherboard had never really covered this sort of consumer tech stuff. And it's sort of my job, you know, not to turn the site upside down and all of a sudden people are drowning in, you know, video game and smartphone reviews. You know, it's not going to be like that. But it doesn't hurt to sort of, you know, talk about the devices that, you know, a lot of people out there use and depend upon every day. And, you know, it's just sort of fun. You know, who doesn't like, you know, a new phone? Who doesn't like a new, you know, a new streaming thing, a new streaming set-top? Who doesn't like this stuff? It's all fun, you know, and fun doesn't hurt.
I know, I love it all. And of course, we love having you on the show, and hopefully we'll have you on sooner than we did this past time. But Vice, Nicholas De Leon, at Nicholas De Leon on Twitter. Anything else you want to get out there?
It was a pleasure to be here. Motherboard's address is motherboard.vice.com. We do really, really cool stuff. Not just my stuff. My stuff is a small percentage of the cool stuff that Motherboard does. And I encourage people to, you know, if you're into science, if you're into tech, we do a lot of like really great science reporting, really great cybersecurity reporting. If you're into any of these sort of like topics, drop on by. I think you'll enjoy yourself.
And that is it from here, everybody. I want to thank Nicholas as always. We'll be back in just a moment with more After Dark Radio here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. We're back here on After Dark Radio. Again, Brian Alvarez here, After Dark Radio, Dark Matter Digital Network. Some strange things going on with the internet here tonight, and I'm not sure exactly what's going on. That's now the second time the show has dropped, and both times when I have headed up to my internet is working fine, so I'm not sure what the issue is, but we'll see what we can do. So I've been two times now. Hasn't happened every week. If it starts to happen regularly, we'll try and figure out something different, but very weird. Anyway, we are here live every Sunday night, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, Dark Matter Digital Network. And if you want to contact the show, any thoughts on the interview with Nicholas De Leon, you're welcome to do so at 425-488-0525. That is 425-488-0525. That is the studio line. If you'd like to give us a call toll-free, you're welcome to do so at 844-411-5411. Interesting number. 1111 is in it. 411 is in missing 411. That is 844-411-5411. Send me a text message at 425-780-7566. Open lines here tonight as we finish up the last half hour of the show. I got some interesting news articles to read as well. A couple of notes from the interview. I had a couple of people on Twitter tweeting me here about Oculus Rift. This person here says, you've heard the word Oculus before because it was a WWE-produced film. They were promoting it a lot when it was coming out. That is not why. This was long prior to that. I remember this from when I was a kid and a teenager. I know. I don't know if it was some science fiction story. I don't know if it was some science fiction film. I am positive that I heard Oculus Rift years and years and years and years ago. Somebody out there has to know where this came from. This person here says, you heard of Oculus Rift because you are in the evil Berenstain Bears universe and not the good Berenstain Bears universe. Maybe that's why, but I once Googled it and I still had no answer. So if anybody can, maybe I am out of my mind. But I could swear I've heard Oculus Rift before, so I'd appreciate any help. And let's go to the phones, and then we'll get into the other stuff I've got here. You're on the air. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
Hi, is this me?
It's you.
It's me. Hey, how you doing? Just wanted to make sure.
Who's me?
Clicker or anything. Me is Damien.
Hello, Damien. What's going on?
Well, I was listening to the interview just now, and it occurred to me that one thing, I mean, at least from what I was hearing. I haven't listened to the entire thing. But one thing seemed to be missing from the equation. There was ads talked about. There was paying for products that were being supplied. But no one seemed to talk about the new busking economy that seems to be arising. Are you familiar with this concept?
The what economy?
Well, busking. Busking is a term where, let's say, if you go out on the street and, you know, you're by the river or something and you're starting to play your guitar or whatever, and people drop, you know, quarters into your hat. And you're doing it just because you love to do it. Doesn't mean that you're necessarily going to get paid, but if you're good enough, people might go ahead and, you know, drop that quarter or that dollar in there. Well, the same kind of thing is starting to arise in the internet economy. We see that in the form of, you know, websites like Kickstarter and GoFundMe, but there are other websites that are starting to do that in a different format, where each time that you produce a piece of content, people can tip you a dollar or two. And that kind of economy is starting to rise up. In fact, Amanda Palmer, the woman that she does solo work now, but once upon a time she was with the Dresden Dolls, and she has been a big proponent of this type of economy, and she started up her funding website, and immediately she jumped into the thousands of dollars. So every time that she produces a new song or a new video, she gets paid that amount, and that's a substantial amount compared to the minuscule ad revenues that Google and other companies can provide. So, I just thought that there would be a very important element to discuss in the interview, but I didn't quite hear that, so I thought I might go ahead and throw that out there.
Well, I had not heard the term busking, but I know exactly what you're talking about in the sense that the way I know about it is there are people that do podcasts, and it's the exact same thing. People don't charge money for the podcast. The podcast is free, but the listeners are welcome to donate whatever they think the podcast is worth. I know people have done the same thing for music as well. And there are people who are making a substantial amount of money doing this. So it's another option. Maybe it'll end up being very successful for a lot of people. It's new. I think that obviously if you're a well-known name, like Adam Carolla, for example, I'm sure could do a busking deal and make tons of money. If you're if you're just starting out with no listeners, it might be tough. But it is an interesting option, and the internet makes it easy with all of the different ways that you can pay for something online.
Yeah, there is one website that I would like to throw out there. I'm not the owner of it by any means, but it is a definite popular destination for people that are into that kind of economy, and it's called Patreon. It's been around for a couple of years now. It was started by the gentleman that began with his girlfriend the band called Pomplamoose back in, oh, I think it was like 2008 or so when they started making videos. And so he was running into that that same conundrum of, I want to make, you know, I need to make money to be able to survive to do the things that I like to do. How can I do that? So he said basically one night he decided to go ahead and ask his fans, would you give me your credit cards? and believe it or not, he was willing. They were willing to do that. So he and his roommate at the time, who was into coding and was into web development, they went ahead and made the site that night, and now they have angel investment, and they have, I think it's like $15 million investment that they recently got back earlier this year. So it's bustling, and it's I think the thing that's attractive, this would be my last thought, I think this is attractive to people because it's sort of a voluntary system. It's turning things over on its head. Instead of making a product and essentially forcing people to purchase it, kind of like a tangible product where you go and buy a CD, since this is more of a service or it's more of an entertainment or something that people like to enjoy to do out of their own passions, kind of like, you know, patrons of the art, it's more or less allowing people to voluntarily donate their money in a form that is convenient for them, versus the kind of like, you know, lay your hands off my product unless you pay for it kind of thing. So it's more like I guess you could call it a carrot versus the stick approach. So that seems to be more appealing to people. And on top of that, I think another reason why this is doing so good is because unlike Kickstarter, which is a whole bunch of money to do one huge project, and you never know whether or not that project's actually going to succeed. What this is allowing people is to see what the person's already doing, and they're like, hey, I like this. I'm a fan of this person. I want to see them succeed more. And so I think it's kind of a bit of insurance to allow them to know what they're putting their money into. Now, you know, and of course they can always pull their money out whenever they want to. But yeah, I think it's kind of like the open source way of funding your own projects. I think that would be the best way to put it. And it has that same philosophy.
Sure.
But yeah, I just thought I'd throw that out there and let people hear about it. And I did enjoy the interview. I think it was great.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate the call. I really appreciate all that information. I know that, I mean, art obviously is doing the Time Travelers, and my main job is WrestlingObserver.com, where we have a wrestling news website, and we do podcasts, and we do everything like that. And in my case, and I'm sure in Art's case as well, there's a certain amount that is needed to keep the whole thing going. And Art has talked about it forever. Keith Rowland has talked about it forever. You got to pay for these music rights fees. There's all sorts of expenses. We have tons of expenses as well. And to me, it's much safer for me to know that I have X number of people who are going to pay X number of dollars every month/year or whatever. Unless there's like a huge plunge for some reason, which we've never had, thank God. Unless there's a huge plunge, because everybody is required to pay the same amount, I know how much is coming in on any given month through the subscription model. So to me, it's a much safer model than the other model, the busking model, where essentially anybody can pay whatever they want or nothing. Now, if I had a second project that was not my livelihood, this, for example, if I set up a subscription area strictly for After Dark Radio, that might be something that I would consider. A service where, okay, we're going to provide these podcasts for you, and you will choose what you feel they are worth, and you can pay that on a monthly, annually, whatever basis. Maybe I would make much more doing a busking model. Maybe I would make much less. Maybe at the end of the day, I would make about the same if I charged, I think Art's charging $7.99 now. And if it was something where I didn't have to rely on it, where it was not my livelihood, where it didn't matter if there were good months and bad months, it might be something fun to do and give people that option. But for a business model where we have people that we have to pay every month, we have expenses, we have server costs, there's a lot of costs involved, and we have to pay those every month. It's good to know that you can rely on X number of people paying X number of dollars. So, but I think it's a really cool idea, and I think that's why you see hobbyist podcasters, for example, that are trying it and making decent money, and people that are in bands that already, I mean, the band's obviously making tons of money, so they do the sample of, we're going to give away this song for free, and you just pay what you want, and before you know it, they're making all this money they never thought they would make. So, very, very interesting. Now, I got to talk about this. I don't talk about politics on this program, and I'm not going to talk about national politics, and trust me, this plays into After Dark Radio. So, when the interview was going on that we did here, I was hanging out with my wife as it was playing. It was a pre-taped interview. And voting day is coming. I believe it's November 3rd. And so we had our ballots. And we were sitting down at the kitchen table. And I opened up the ballot. And I hadn't even opened up the voter pamphlet yet. I'd only opened up the ballot. And I opened up the ballot. And I'm looking at everything. And this is Seattle. I look down and I see there are all these various positions. There's judge position number 3, there's commissioner position number 5, and then there's Port of Seattle, commissioner position number 2, nonpartisan office. And I'm glancing at it, and I see that there are 2 people running. There are 2 people that I can vote for. One is Courtney Gregoire, and the other is, and this is all one word, Good Space Guy. That's all it says. Good space guy. These are the two people that are running for the commissioner position number 2 in the Port of Seattle. Courtney Gregwire and good space guy. And I said to my wife, what is good space guy? And she says, hold on, let me check the voter pamphlet. So we open up the voter pamphlet, and here's good space guy. His website, I mean, it's public here in the voter pamphlet, so I guess I can tell the world. Colonize space at blogspot.com, or .blogspot.com. It says here his occupation is a shared corporate owner, and then it just says, in quotes, unsabotage our shared competitive free market. And then there is a long statement by Good Space Guy about why I guess you should vote for him. I'm only going to read part of this because there's more. He says, warning, there are several people, some brilliant, who have been writing and producing under Good Space Guy's name, perhaps to cause him vote loss, question mark. This is entirely necessary because Good Space Guy can lose votes all by himself just by saying that the anti-free market minimum wage should be abolished so that less productive, disadvantaged people can easily get work at their low market value, blah, 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 blah. I was baffled when I saw this. And so, of course, the first thing I do is I Google Good Space Guy, and what should come up but his Wikipedia? Good Space Guy has a Wikipedia. And so I was fascinated. And here's how this ties into After Dark Radio. Good Space Guy, born Michael George Nelson, is an American perennial candidate from Washington State. He received a BA from the University of Maryland. He's 72 years old, by the way. Originally named Michael Nelson, he legally added Good Space Guy to his name in 2006, becoming Michael Good Space Guy Nelson, and subsequently changed his name to the single word Good Space Guy. He is a self-described extraterrestrial life. So the point of all of this is, in my ballot, I have the opportunity to vote for an extraterrestrial. He is an extraterrestrial life. Good space guy. When I first saw it, I thought, this must be a guy who has started his own company called Good Space, and I don't know what it sells, boxes or something like that, and maybe he decided to run as Good Space Guy in some way to get news of his business out there. No, Good Space Guy is Good Space Guy, like a spaceman, an extraterrestrial. So there you go. If you're in Seattle and you want to tell your grandchildren that you voted for an extraterrestrial, now's your chance. And by the way, it says here, he's never been elected to office, by the way, and he's run a million times, which is why he's dubbed a perennial candidate. But it does say here that his best electoral showing was in the 2009 race for King County Council District 8, in which he polled 16% of the vote against Dow Constantine, which is something that if Dow Constantine ever writes his memoirs, the fact that he was running against Good Space Guy, an extraterrestrial, and 16% of the vote went to the space alien, that's something to write about. There you go. Also, a lot of people were, earlier today we were talking about the floating city supposedly seen in China. I did a lot of Googling of this, and as I had suspected, there are in fact a lot of people who believe that it was merely a mirage. Now, Snopes.com, which is usually pretty good, they don't even believe it was a mirage. They believe it was a hoax through and through, in the sense that there is one grainy, short video clip that went viral, and everything else about the story is unconfirmed. The claim that thousands of people in China saw this floating city. Where are all of the witnesses? None of them have come forward. Literally, the only story we have is the story accompanying the video. There's no proof that this was from China. There is no evidence this was from anywhere. So Snopes believes it was hoax through and through, and other people, and this was all over the place. It was on CNN. It was everywhere. And many people believe it also may have been a mirage. But Snopes is leaning towards hoax because there's no other evidence. There's no other. I remember a few years ago when there was the alleged UFO over the Temple Mount in Jerusalem. And at least in that story, there were, I think, four different videos, all from different positions. And if I recall correctly, it was all an elaborate hoax. But the point was, at least there were four different videos. You would think in China, if thousands and thousands of people had seen a floating city, that there would be more than one quick, grainy, short video. Even if it were a mirage. If you're able to take the video of the mirage, then that would mean that other people would as well. And there are no other videos turning up to the best of my knowledge. So I, as well as Snopes, based on that information, call shenanigans. And Keith here says, don't vote for Good Space Guy. It is a reptilian bound to take over the world. I had not thought of that. Mostly because there's a photo in the voters pamphlet of Good Space Guy, and he looks like a 72-year-old dude and not a reptile. So I had taken that out of consideration, but who knows? Maybe that's possible. I should also note that earlier today I got a message from Filthy Tom Lawler. Those of you from the wrestling side will know him. He is a UFC fighter. He's a regular on our show. And he had, he claims, an After Dark style experience when he was out in the mountains yesterday. And the way he described it to me in a short text message, it sounds like some sort of shapeshifter. So I'm going to get him to tell that story tomorrow. I tried to get him to call in tonight, but it doesn't look like he's going to do so. If you would like to call in, a couple of lines here. Studio line 425-488-0525. If you have free long distance, if you want to call us via Skype, that's the number 425-488-0525. If you would like to call us toll free, we pay for the call, 844-411-5411. That is 844-411-5411. And you can also send me a text message at 425-780-7566. That's text messages only. 425-780-7566. My email address, brian@afterdarkradioshow.com. My Twitter, @BrianAlvarez. So head up there and let me know what's going on. This person emailed an update on the Apple TV. He says the original and maybe the second generation Apple TV can be jailbroken and allows people to load a lot more content worldwide, or so I was told while traveling in Europe. So that must be the answer as to why my first generation Apple TV was worth more than a brand new Apple TV when I went to trade it in. So there you go. Still no good answer as to what's going on with Oculus Rift. Still trying to find out if anybody can tell me where I might have heard that well over a decade ago. I would love to know. Because when it first came out, I thought, God, what are they naming that after? Maybe this is like the Berenstain Bears. To the phones, you are on the air. Who is this and where are you calling from?
It's Dave from Wisconsin.
Yes, Dave. Calling early tonight, thank God.
I had a lot on my mind, and I was going to call in, I think, on a subject. I think that was mentioned in the interview, but now I can't really recall. I guess I waited a little bit too long.
Oculus Rift. Virtual reality.
It's not too important, I guess, but like I was thinking about, because you mentioned the old Berenstain Bears thing again.
Oh, yeah.
And then we also had everyone's favorite caller before he went offline the first time, Mr. Ryan from Cumberlander. Whatever.
I blame Ryan for us being knocked off the air twice tonight, but that's just me.
I mean, it's a vast conspiracy. I think that Brian Ladd really controls the internet at this point. How can you deny it?
I do like how I was knocked off the air not during Ryan's call.
You were not, no, from my end, you were knocked off during it, yeah, so.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, so I heard.
Well, everybody who gets the podcast will get to hear it in all its full glory.
I'm excited, but I mean, personally, my subscription is a secret, so don't tell anyone.
That's right.
Anyway, what I was going to call is during like the past like past 4 years or whatever, I was when I had to travel between my parents' residence when I was living at home and college. Sometimes I'd come home for the weekend. I lived about an hour away from my college town versus my parents' house. And what I would do is, and I also lived there during high school, so I knew this. I knew this like strip mall area where certain like restaurants or like stores would be located. And what I noticed is there was always this location that I would pass when I would go out to college. It was always like it was a coffee shop, ice cream shop, and then it was a pizza shop. I won't go into any names, but that's all you really need to know is like what they sold. And then it was a video game shop, and then it was a mattress shop, and those were like the five places in the spot. And then all of a sudden, when I started commuting more regularly, what I noticed is that the mattress shop and the pizza shop switched locations. Now, I don't see any reason for this, and it just seemed very unusual to me. But like it also kind of strikes me as essentially that Berenstain like thing. I'd never really noticed any of the differences. It had always been the same. It was always, you know, coffee shop.
This is totally my memory of Oculus Rift.
Right. And so there was no reason for any of these places to switch. I mean, it's a pizza shop. You have to have your like ovens for stuff. And the mattress shop obviously could be open in like any old place, but this the pizza place, like you have to move ovens, you got to put tables in, but like the places have switched, like basically one move to the right, one move to the left, and it's just the weirdest thing.
Now, have you ever gone in and said, hey, kind of weird that you guys switched locations, kind of throw something out like that and see if the guy goes, what are you talking about, Dave?
I've never thought about it because I've never had any reason to go like in that area, and I've never like because it's a place that also delivers pizza, so it's a national chain location, and I've never had a reason to buy a mattress yet because hand-me-downs and whatnot, but but yeah, so I just kind of
you got to go in there sometime. You just got to go in there, and here's what I want you to do. I'm on a kick. An NPR kick. You're going to be one of my roving reporters. So go in there with your iPhone and use the voice memo deal so that you can record this conversation. Don't get any names, of course. But go in there and just nonchalantly say, man, you know, I love this pizza place. I seem to recall you guys used to be right next door and the mattress store was here. What possessed you guys to switch places? Just to see what they say.
You know, I could easily do that, but then I have to ingest some of that questionable pizza. But, you know, for you, Brian, maybe, just maybe.
Please, David. I requested a guy send me a picture of himself in a king outfit from his Halloween costume party, and he did it.
Okay.
I couldn't even believe that he would be in a king costume, and he was.
All right. Well, that was cool. I'm just glad. I guess I should tell you, I think I mentioned in the past that I started jiu-jitsu.
Yes.
Probably about, like, a year ago. I just got promoted to blue belt. I got that presented to by Keegan Machado, and I spent Halloween with him, so it was pretty dope.
You spent Halloween with Machado?
With Keegan Machado, yeah.
Wow.
It was awesome.
What was it? What did he go out as?
He was bundled up because we're in Wisconsin, so he actually wore multiple light jackets, a heavy coat, and a hat, so it wasn't really prepared.
Huh.
But it was a fun night.
Well, that's great, and congratulations.
Thank you. Have a good night.
All right. You head over to that you know what? Take Keegan Machado to that pizza shop with you, just in case anything goes wrong. He'll take care of any problems. That's a weird one. That is a weird one. The pizza shop and the mattress shop. He swears they used to be in opposite places. And now they're back. It's very, very weird. Speaking of Ryan, I should have told him this story when he called in earlier. I want everyone to go to AfterDarkRadioShow.com, and on the left-hand side of the page, there's a bunch of in-the-news stories, It is, you can, essentially it's the RSS feed for unexplained-mysteries.com. But about four down, under the Halloween asteroid that looks like a human skull, you'll see a story, man encounters doppelganger on plane flight. Neil Thomas Douglas had been on his way to Galway aboard a flight when he spotted a fellow passenger who looked rather familiar. Upon closer inspection, he realized the stranger was in fact so similar to him that the two men could have been mistaken for identical twins. Now, this is not just a story, everybody, but if you go up, in fact, actually, I got an even easier idea. I'm going to retweet the photo that he put up on Twitter. Retweet. All right. If you go up to my Twitter right now, at Brian Alvarez, you can see Lee's picture of him and his doppelganger. They both happen to be on a flight. They are of no relation to each other. They don't know each other, but they look exactly the same. The remarkable coincidence did not end there either, as later on, the two strangers bumped into one another a further two times, once when booking into their hotel, and again at a local pub. Total weirdness, Douglas said of the incident. We had a laugh and a pint. So there you go. Head up to my Twitter and check that picture out. Doppelganger on a plane. Ryan was so worried that there was a doppelganger, and now he's going to be even more concerned. Keith here says, are you sure you're not thinking of Optimus Prime? No! I'm telling you, Oculus Rift. I'm positive. I would put, honest to God, I would put, and there's no way to prove this, so I probably should put more, but I put $1,000 on this. That's how certain I am that I had heard Oculus Rift long, long, long before it ever became a virtual reality headset or whatever it is. Someone's going to find this. Someone's going to find this. And I won't charge you $1,000, but I know that somewhere out there, someone has the answer to my question. We're running low on time, everybody, so I want to direct you all to a couple of different places. AfterDarkRadioShow.com. If you're listening live, go there right now, and you can download our October 25th show with Matt Baglio talking exorcisms. An awesome show. Matt Baglio show is up there as a free download right now. If you're listening to this show as a download somewhere, if you're listening on replay, we air live every Sunday, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, here on the Dark Matter Digital Network. Dark Matter Digital airs 24/7. You can hear it on TuneIn Radio. Just grab the TuneIn Radio app for your smartphone and search for Dark Matter Digital or Dark Matter Radio or Art Bell. It'll all come up. And Art Bell does air live and free in this time slot, Monday through Friday, 9 Pacific, midnight Eastern, for 3 hours. You can join the time travelers up at artbell.com, Dark Matter Digital Network. And for $7.99 a month, you can get all of Art's shows on a podcast. So head up there and check that out. And of course, I want to thank all of you for listening here tonight. The great Art Bell, Keith Rowland, everybody. We'll be back next week with a brand new show, After Dark Radio, here on the Dark Matter Digital Network.
she always